Sometimes when we're solving problems, we become isolated to the things that we know because it's easy and it's right there in front of us. But there are factors in your problem, or there might be factors in your problem that you don't know. You don't know the answers to. And so you gotta be really honest about this.
Entrepreneurs love talking about business. However, it's no secret there's also so many things they love talking about which are not about business. In the Sea of Business podcasts, none of your business is a refreshing break, a surprise kiss, an afternoon fizz. Through Carla Singson's cheeky and radical takes on mundane and principle-heavy topics, you'll gain insights that guarantee you something to talk about on your first Tinder date, while visiting grandma, or if you want to impress your new boss. Big thanks to Proximity Outsourcing for sponsoring this episode. Outsource the most tedious tasks in your business, such as data management, appointment setting, and creatives, for less than $12 an hour, fully managed. Visit ProximityOutsourcing.com for more info. Tired of business podcasts? Tune in to None of Your Business. New episodes weekly.
Hey, 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 good morning, everyone. This is Carla. I hope you're feeling awesome today because we have a pretty good topic for our podcast, None of Your Business. And this is actually not none of your business. This is actually your main business for the rest of your life, because our topic today is, in my opinion, or in my life, what are the best ways to solve problems? So I've just been thinking about what other people usually ask me, or for my opinion, or what people go to me for. Anyway, English is not my first language, so if my grammar is incorrect, please DM me. But so in this podcast episode, I'm going to share my best ways to solve problems. What qualifies me to have this conversation with you is, number one, I'm the eldest child of an Asian family. And when you're the eldest child of an Asian family, you are expected to solve problems. You are expected to be the leader when mom and dad are gone, and you're supposed to just make it work. You know, you're going to be the decision maker, you're going to call the shots, and you're going to solve problems. So that's my first qualification. My second qualification is I realized that I have over a decade of experience in event planning. So when I quit my job in 2011, I was a copywriter for an ad agency. They started saying that I need to put in more hours or need to meet clients, and then I need to dress up better. Basically, follow the dress code, but I really liked coming to work in my t-shirt, jeans, and flip-flops, and I was very rebellious. I told my boss, like, I don't need a uniform or a dress code because I'm just a writer and I'm an artist. And I was very rebellious, and I really refused to do that. But he did offer me kind of a marketing executive job. And I understand that that's what the job entailed, and I was just not down for it. So when I quit that job, I became an MC. I MC'd weddings, corporate events. I really loved it. In fact, I co-hosted alongside some of the biggest celebrities in the Philippines. And after I co-hosted with one of the biggest stars, I realized that if I was to remain an MC, I will have a ceiling on the money that I will make. And so I sat with myself and I thought, who makes the most money in an event? And I realized it's probably the event planner. So let me make this work. Let me put my skills together. Let me put my sales hat on. And after I closed my first corporate events client, which was Sony, I had opened a whole new set of opportunities for myself, for my events planning company. It was such an awesome time. And so I spent more than a decade in event planning. In fact, I am currently planning my wedding in the Philippines. I'm so excited. So I'm also planning that. I'm doing event planning again. I guess it just never stops. And from time to time, I still assist my friends whenever they organize events and masterminds. I don't only help out with planning the event, but also planning revenue optimization, which I used to consult a lot of businesses and event planners with how to make more money for an event. And I basically just give my time away to my friends and or sponsor their event because I don't do event planning anymore as a full-time gig because I'm focused on my outsourcing company. Although if you're listening and you're based in the Philippines, my event planning, PR and event rentals company is still alive and kicking. We serve all cities in the Philippines. And in fact, we always have events. We always have something going on. So my team runs it. I still do strategy for that company, but it is independent from basically my day to day. I don't think about it in my day to day. I just strategize if there's a big event and or I help my team organize a huge event and organize the labor and the manpower for that event. So I spend a lot of time event planning, and in event planning, no matter what type of event it is, it could be a wedding, a corporate event, a mastermind, a conference, a small retreat, you will always run into problems. And so you are definitely forced to think on your feet. You're forced to think of solutions very quickly. You're forced to look at certain situations in different ways. And spending so much of my life, literally half of my life in that career, helped hone certain skills in my thinking that helped me solve problems. And I would say my last qualification is in my own business and in the business of other people or other clients, I still do a lot of consultative work. And this is not to say that, oh, I'm a full-time consultant. I am a full-time human being, full-time wife, full-time sister, full-time friend. But also, I lead my company as the CEO and founder, Proximity Outsourcing. But whenever I am really involved in sales and growth, which is the department where I'm really, really putting a lot of time on as the founder, I work with our sales team and I work with a lot of clients also in determining that first step of figuring out what they need for their business, figuring out the role that they need to place in their company. What is the role that they need to outsource these tasks to? So that initial call or initial conversation with my business is very consultative. And in that call, we are going to solve problems for you. And so this is why in our basically sales process at Proximity, it's not really like a sales call. We're just really helping you out. And if we feel like it's a good match, then we can present how we can work together. Sorry for that. I should turn that down. But also, it is very consultative in such a way that if your expectations are not aligned with what you need, or if you have misconceptions about the industry, we will help you get through these thought processes. And we'll help you get to the solution that you need. So whether that means we work together or not, the important thing is we were able to help you. So very, very consultative. And I tell my sales team this, like, don't be forced or pressured to close the deal, because even if we don't close the deal, they will remember how much we've helped them, and that will make a positive mark on them. And so I always believe that in business, your name is one of the best assets that you have. And this is why a lot of our conversations and a lot of the interactions that we have between the public or prospects or leads to our company is very, very consultative. I have personally done hundreds of these sales calls. In the first year in my outsourcing company, I did all the sales calls myself. I hustled the fuck out of that business. And that's one of the reasons why in 2020 we were able to go from basically zero to a $1 million company in a year without spending anything on ads. So we just come in the spirit of help, and whatever happens, happens. So, yeah, eldest child, number two, event planning experience and doing a lot of consultative work. So I would say that among all of those experiences, I have figured out a few ways that could help you think of things a certain way to solve problems. Number one, I would say, would be work with data. So I think this is the most basic and the most in your face solution or best way to solve a problem, because when you work with data, you just see things for what it is. It is a source of truth and it is infallible. So when I say work with data, you maybe research or find out probabilities, percentages, gather as many numbers as you can or sets of numbers. Numbers are really your friend here. If there are published studies that prove something correct or that prove something incorrect, so graphs, pie charts, or whatever, right? So when you also research these studies, you have to also realize or find out what factors are there in those studies. And so let me give you an example. So, for example, you're looking for the perfect facial wash and facial moisturizer, and your problem is acne. And so when you try to find the right products or set of products for your skin problem, you are going to look at certain products. You're going to look at what studies have been done and what tests have been done. And then you look at factors like is this product tested on Asian skin types and in the Asian climate? If I was the one shopping and if I was living in Asia, those are the questions I would ask. Did they test this on humans or did they test this on animals? And did they test it on live humans, right? Because these are a lot of like really different factors, you know? So those are the things that you kind of think about and how you can flesh out a problem. So another very common example for working with data is when you try to figure out your budget. So your budget for something, you have a definite amount that you need to budget or you need to just make this amount work, right? So whether you're thinking of a vacation budget or a budget for your house, then you gotta really work with data. How much money are you making? How much, what's the percentage of that income goes to these fixed expenses, which is rent, groceries, utilities, and what is fun money? You know, what is really your disposable income? So are there any ways that you can make more money? Are there any ways that you can spend less? And so for that problem, you got to work with data. In your business, maybe this is, say, lead generation. So a lot of people who come to me and ask me, hey, Carla, can I buy just 1 hour of your time? And I send them my calendar. And most of the time, people come to me with a lead generation problem. They're always like, oh, it's so hard to find leads. It's so hard to close them. I don't know what to do. I don't have a steady stream. And then I always tell them, where did your last 10 leads come from? And what is the process from them hearing about you or coming into your world to closing? And so I encourage them to work backwards and look at the data. So was it Facebook, email, Instagram? Was it introduced by a friend? Maybe you can zero in on that one or two channels and you can provide or make some repeatable processes that will make that channel richer in terms of getting more leads, getting more prospects that are of the same warmth and of the same profile as your best clients. And so really, it's just a lot of like working with data and being mindful about the data that you're working with. So the other kind of mental exercise that I do to solve problems is I ask myself, what do I know and what do I not know? And so usually I would just split a paper in half and then here are the things that I know, and here are the things that I don't know, and these are the things that are important. And so for the things that I don't know, then I research, I backtrack, or I work backwards, or I reach out to people who can give me advice or point me to the right direction. So it's really good to ask yourself this question because sometimes when we're solving problems, we become isolated to the things that we know because it's easy and it's right there in front of us. But there are factors in your problem, or there might be factors in your problem that you don't know. You don't know the answers to. And so you gotta be really honest about this and then use that as a mental exercise. The third mental exercise or principle that I use is using what I call the debate mindset. And so when I was in college, I was actually a competitive debater. So I was part of the school debate club, debate varsity. I actually graduated as the president of the debate varsity. So I'm a hashtag super nerd. And I debated in two formats. I debated the British parliamentary format, which has two people in a team, and the Asian parliamentary format, which has three people in a team. So for people who don't know, when you compete in these formats, you have 15 to 30 minutes time to prep and write down your arguments and prepare a 7-minute speech to defend your side. And so you basically draw, you draw like who goes first or who belongs to the opening house or the closing house for the British parliamentary format. And then you pick a pro or a con side, and then you argue for that side. And so the thing with debate is that usually debates actually solve the same problem, but the people argue based on which is the better solution. So for people who are not debate nerds, I'm going to break this down for you. And I hope that you enjoy this breakdown. So, for example, in a debate about legalizing prostitution, the legalization of prostitution, let's legalize it. So if I was in the pro side, I would argue, let's legalize it so that we can regulate it. We can provide healthcare to the women and protection to the prostitutes, not just women. And then we can tax it, and we can use that tax to further healthcare and maybe even education, sex education, and stuff like that. And for the con side, they would argue, let's not do that. It's not a good match for the society and culture. It's going to probably suggest or demoralize the structure of the nuclear family. Also, if we're going to tax that, it's another channel for corruption. Also, you're not really protecting women. You're maybe even driving these operations more underground because they want to keep operating, but they don't want to pay taxes. So it's still going to exist. Now you're just driving them to be more hidden and more underground. And so in those two sides, you will see that there's a lot of commonality in like wanting to protect women, wanting to use the money in the right way, and wanting and the state wanting to protect certain sectors of society. Right. So those are kind of the common threads in the in that debate. And so when I say the way I solve problems, sometimes I wear or I imbibe the debate mindset. I think of the pros and cons, and then I think of how I would argue for both sides. So what is the pro if I do this? What is the con if I do that? And it also involves a lot of what does it mean to walk in their shoes, right? So that's also another thing that we do in debate. Because when you debate about things such as legalizing abortion, decriminalizing drugs, or legalizing prostitution, or things like that, the concepts and the principles that are being used in these debates are very macro. And so one of the most effective ways to argue in these debates is to actually bring it down to the micro, or what does it feel like to actually be that prostitute, or what is it like to walk in the shoes of these women who are trying to find a safe and secure way to get an abortion, but they can't because it's not legal, blah blah blah. So what does it mean to walk in their shoes? And so even when you're just like fleshing out an argument with your partner, if you think of what does it look like from their side? What does it look like from their perspective? What is it like to walk in their shoes? It really gives you a different perspective of the problem that helps you understand it better. And so, one of the things in my life that I've used this principle on is deciding where to live. And so during the pandemic, I knew I was ready to not live in the Philippines. I was just very, very upset about how they treated the pandemic as a whole. So after staying in Vegas for a bit, I had an office in Quezon City in the Philippines at that time in my past business, and I was keen to stay there for a bit. I was keen to maybe stay there for a year so that I could really get settled in that office. I could train my teammates in person, and then, after that year, maybe I'll go back to the States or I'll stay in Canada or whatever, right? However, I was just so pissed, and because of how the Philippine government handled the pandemic, the face shields and all these stupid rules and all this infighting about like the vaccine and what that means and all of these just weird and stupid rules, in my opinion, they were. So I decided to leave the Philippines again, and I was deciding actually between Mexico and Bali because both Playa del Carmen, Mexico, and Bali, Indonesia, had a lot of what I would like in a city. So it was close to the beach, a lot of people from different parts of the world, which was exciting for me. I love meeting other people, learning from them, and all that. And I just love having like an international crowd wherever I live. And those were the two places that were pretty easy to get like a 6-month visa. And then I just decided that, as soon as I get there, I'll figure out what I'm going to do for the next round of like residency or visa. So I had a huge list of pros and cons between these two options. And if you guys remember at that time, I would say third quarter of 2021, second or third quarter, that was also the time when a lot of countries, especially in Europe, were announcing their digital nomad visas. And so that time, I also considered moving to Malta or maybe Romania, and I wanted to see Europe, right? And so I had all of these options. But aside from that, my big two was really like Bali or Playa del Carmen, Mexico. And it was the competition between these two places was really tight that I actually got a 6-month business visa and a 6-month Mexican tourist visa. So I had both, and those were in my hand already. It was just a matter of me deciding. So ultimately, obviously, Mexico won, and it was when I listed the pros and cons, it was just I just knew that it was very important for me to stay in this time zone, in the US time zone, so that I could grow my business more. And it was awesome. It turned out to be the right decision. My company hit our first six-figure month in my, let me see, probably fourth or fifth month being in Mexico. And that was such a great time, and it was a great affirmation of my decision. And so, see, some of your guys is like, biggest decisions, you might not know that it at the time when you're making the decision, and you will realize a little bit later that that decision really paid off super well. And this is why when you make a decision or when you're trying to solve a problem, you really need as many mental, graphs or guides as much as possible. And that's another reason why I'm inspired to share this list with you guys. And so, my number four mental exercise is thinking about and preparing for the worst case scenario. So, I know this is very common. You've probably heard of this before. You've done this before so many times in small decisions such as what to eat for dessert, and in big decisions such as should I leave my spouse, right? And so you ask yourself, what is the worst case scenario? What is the worst that can happen? So we have asked this question so many times whenever we take risks, when we take a financial risk, when we are investing in something new, when we are making a huge life decision, we always think about the best case, and then we kind of bask in that glory of the best case scenario. But of course, you also can't deny that it is a lot of help and it will do you a huge favor if you also think of the worst case scenario. And so when you think of that, ask yourself, is it bearable? And what do I do when that happens? And so I know that most of you, when you're making your plans, you develop a plan B or a plan C, but a lot of people also go straight to plan Z, right? Like just really taking it further and preparing for that. And sometimes this exercise helps you a lot because when you realize that the worst case scenario is not that bad, and you can actually prepare for it, it lowers the risk for you, or it makes you feel better about your decision, which is at the end of the day is still a huge thing. The bigger the decision you're making, how you feel about it, how it drops in your body. And so I really love that. I really love that kind of mental exercise and bodily and somatic exercise, actually. And that's the next part that I will share. Before, I was very, very data driven. I was very hardline in terms of making decisions. I would have all these lists, pros and cons. But sometimes these little red flags and these little icky feelings come up in your body, and you tend to ignore it. In women, this is what we call usually intuition, right? But a lot of guys, of course, also have this. Actually, everyone has this. The thing about our brains is that there's thousands and thousands of stimuli that we are exposed to every day, but our brain cannot process all of that data. You're seeing hundreds of colors. You're hearing hundreds of sounds. You're smelling hundreds of smells. All of that data cannot be synthesized immediately in the moment. And so sometimes all of these data make up for some sort of an unfurnished, unfinished thought. And then that actually becomes an intuition, a hunch. So when you're making big decisions, try to spend some time meditating and see how certain decisions feel in your body. You can even go as far as researching what muscle testing is. Try to research it. One of my life coaches taught me about this, and it is really being more in tune with your body and your muscle and how it responds to certain decisions in your life. A lot of people use this as a way to strengthen their intuition and as a way to trust themselves. And you know what? I have experienced the wealth of the knowledge of my own body and my own intuition when I was single. When I was openly dating, I would meet some guys that are so good on paper, but never felt right in my feelings, in my body. I never felt healed when I'm with them. I never felt at peace when I was with them. But on paper, they were awesome and they were saying the right things and they were even reading the right books and were very attracted to me, and I was very attracted to them, but something just felt wrong in my body. In fact, when I look back, there were two guys that I dated that were super toxic and super bad for me. And I even realized that in those times, it was very hard for me to lose weight. And it was also very hard. The one guy also who turned out to be a drug addict, I was getting breakouts. So that was kind of like my body telling me that this is not good for you chemically. His presence, his hormones, his body is not good for you, not a good match for you. And I also learned that if it's hard for you to lose weight around a person, it is, the theory is, because you're unconsciously protecting yourself from that person. And so that's why your fat never leaves your body, because it is a layer of protection. So pretty interesting, no? Pretty interesting theory, pretty interesting perspective. But I believe in the power of our thoughts and the power of our body. Our bodies and our minds are one of the best performing CPUs in the world, right? And you may know more than you think. And so don't forget to add that to your like problem solving mechanism or all these on top of your other mental exercises. And you can take that further too by journaling or next strategy I'll teach you, writing things down. So writing things down is awesome because it helps you flesh out ideas better and it also helps you think better. And when you see your ideas and when you see the options on paper, it feels more real and it feels, you know, when the thought leaves your body and enters the paper in form of an ink, right? In form of the ink, basically making it smart. It feels more real. And when you see it there, you get to confront yourself with the choices that you're about to make, with the factors that are in play, at play, and what data you have, what data you don't have. Basically, you can use all of the previously shared mental exercises and just write things down. The pros and cons, you know, coming up with debate arguments, figuring out the worst case scenario, you can write all those things down. And seeing how you feel. So you can also, it's called journaling. When you write how you feel and when you're just really open and honest and transparent with yourself. And so that's really effective for me because I'm a writer and it also motivates me to think better because when I write, I feel like my thoughts come to a point of finalization and it makes me more conscious when it's on paper. And so when I write things down, I flesh my thoughts out better. I'm motivated to think better. And I could also see my mistakes faster. If I feel like I'm making a mistake, whether it is the wrong computation of a probability or a percentage, or it's just wrong information because of this new thing that I've researched. So it is super helpful. I am a big user of the pen and paper. I actually have lots of notebooks around me. And so it is a fun activity, and you should definitely, definitely do that when you're making a huge life decision. And so the last thing that I want to share is it is also very useful and helpful if you break down big problems into smaller ones. And so whether you have a goal, or a big goal or a big problem, sometimes the way to solve these things and or to achieve these things is to break them down into smaller goals. So one of my examples would be, say, in your business, you have a big goal, profit, or you know, target. So let's say you're aiming to make your first $1 million this year. So what is that in months? That would be at least 84,000 a month, US dollars. And then that would be at least 21,000 a week. So if you just try to make 21,000 a week, that is 3,000 a day if you work every day. If you don't, then maybe 4,000 a day for 5 days or more, 4,500. So if that is your goal to make that money, it's easy for you to get to, it's easier because you can now just break down your goals into everyday things. When I had this big goal when my mom was still alive of owning 30 real estate properties because she said that if you own 30 real estate properties, rent them out for long term, you are going to be set for life. And so I really like that. And it was a great target for me. But now that I'm here and I'm past halfway through that, of course, with the help of my husband, and we are also combining our income from our businesses, and we're also combining our brains. So we will get to that number very soon or sooner than I thought. So we are actually increasing our target. So we have broken that down to little goals every year, every quarter, and basically what is our investment strategy in terms of real estate. And so before I didn't have a lot of money, but I knew that I had this big number in my head. And so I found ways to invest in real estate very cheaply. I started by buying memorial lots. I started by purchasing condos on pre-selling. So pre-selling is before the developers even do anything in the land. So they're basically announcing that, hey, this is what we're going to do here. There's going to be a development. If you want to book your slot, pay this money for 4 years, and then after 4 years, we'll build the building, and then we'll turn it over to you, and you pay the rest. And so it's pretty easy. It's pretty chill. Some of my condos, I only started paying $200 a month just to lock it in, and then it takes 4 to 5 years for the project to finish. Thankfully, I've been investing for more than a decade, so I have definitely seen the fruits of my labor. Some of my properties are on Airbnb, some of them are on long-term rentals, and the other bonus that I love is that some of our properties, me and my husband, we even love staying in them. So it is a great bonus, and I am proud to say that the way that I achieved all of these perks is because a long time ago, no matter how big that goal is for me, even though it sounds not like achievable, when I was in my early 20s to own 30 properties, my God, that sounds fucking daunting. Like, how would I even be afford to do that? I was able to find ways to start slow and start small and just keep grinding. And so, what is achievable? What is something that I can start? So you can do that. You can do that in sales, sales targets or doing, or if you have a big investment goal, just like what I did, or even something super personal, just like getting to your ideal weight, right? You can just really divide that into certain habits, your diet, your movement, exercise. So there's little things that you can just do every day to get to your goal. And so I think that I've shared everything here. I hope that you like this episode. I hope that it gave you something to think about. And if you have any more suggestions, or if you want to share what you thought of this episode, I would love to hear from you guys. Please send me a message on Instagram. It's at Carla Stefan, KarlaStefan. And if you have any suggestions for a future episode, please let me know. Once again, this episode is brought to you by Proximity Outsourcing, proximityoutsourcing.com, for all of your managerial outsource needs, virtual assistants, video editors, creatives, designers, project managers, client success managers, operations manager, even podcast producers, bookkeepers. We all got it. So all you need to do is just book your time on the website, proximityoutsourcing.com. My team also produces this podcast. If you're thinking of launching a podcast and you just want to show up and record, it is super easy. The team has all the SOPs. Let me know and reach out to me, and I'm happy to help. I'll even give you a discount if you mention this podcast. All right. So that's the pod. Thank you so much for being here with me, and I'll see you next week for another episode of None of Your Business. Bye. So it's a wrap. To my entrepreneur friends, I hope that you found this episode interesting and enjoyable. I know I did. Big thanks to our sponsor, Proximity Outsourcing, for making this possible. If you need to outsource anything in your business so you can scale fast and easy, visit proximityoutsourcing.com and check out their solutions. If there's any topic that you want to request, feel free to reach out. I only have two conditions. You tell me why you find it interesting, and you promise it's not business talk. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, and leave us a comment or review because you're cool like that. This is your host, Carla, and thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for your interest in fun stories. Now we can get back to business. See you next week. And remember, everything here is none of your business.